Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. She's won an Oscar. She's won a Golden Globe. She was nominated for two more Oscars for the 1969 film Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice and 1978's Heaven Can Wait. She was married to star extraordinaire Cary Grant. He was 61 at the time. She was 28. The marriage lasted 3 years and produced a daughter, actress Jennifer Grant. This hour, we'll talk to Diane Cannon about her life, her work, and what she learned along the way. We'll discuss her movies and her book, Dear Cary, My Life with Cary Grant, which details her time behind the scenes with the actor. Diane Cannon is bringing her talent to Kansas City for the New Theater Restaurant's production of The Fox on the Fairway. It runs from August 29th to November 3rd. And Diane, so good to have you here. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's go to page 17 of your book, Dear Cary. And there you describe meeting Cary Grant in person for the first time. And Diane, you write this: "When I stepped into the room, I felt for a second like I'd been hit by a stun gun. Standing in front of me was the most arrestingly handsome man I had ever laid eyes on. I hadn't and still haven't seen anyone who radiated such godlike masculine beauty." The book came out a couple of years ago. I'm wondering how that moment compared to meeting me about 10 minutes ago. Help me with that. That was even a... but that wasn't even a joke, Diane.
Oh, my goodness. That was good.
Well, I read the words godlike masculine beauty, and I naturally thought of myself.
Well, actually, I was struck by how young you are.
Well, yeah.
I imagined you to be older. I don't know why, but you're kind of young and hunky.
Well, I think I'm going to retire now from Up to Date. Just for the record, Diane Cannon just called me young and hunky. Do I have that? It's on tape forever, right? We're done.
H-U-N-K-Y-Y-Y-Y-Y.
Steven Steigman, our producer, can come out and take. I'm done. I'm done with my career here on radio. I've reached it. Okay, you say all these things about Cary Grant, and yet you kept putting him off. He'd ask you out for lunch back when you first met him, and you toss him one white lie after another. Why? Why wouldn't you go out with Cary Grant?
My little voice kept saying, "Uh-uh, don't do it."
Yeah,
you know those little voices that we hide under the carpet, and then that the pile gets so high we start tripping over them.
Yes,
it was that reason. But he was a man of incredible charm, and tremendous allure, and he allured me big time.
He kept coming.
He kept coming.
He would call you every morning at 7:45.
Right.
To do what?
To listen to the Daily Word. It was at that time, I think it was.
On the radio, right?
Yes, on the radio. On the radio, because TV wasn't as big a deal then. It was a big deal, but that was where the radio show was. He was very spiritual, and he was looking for answers, as I was, and we had that immediate connection.
You know, that morning when you first met him in his office, you walked in by yourself. You thought a buddy of yours was going to come with you, but you walked in alone.
My agent accompanied me to the studio, yes.
But not into the office.
No.
I'm wondering, when you had that kind of reaction to him, how were you able to carry on a conversation?
Well, he made it very simple. You know, when you have a connection with somebody, it's kind of like me and you, Steve.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
You called me hunky, so we definitely have a connection. Forever.
It was easy. It was just... Maybe for the first few minutes when I couldn't open my mouth to speak, it was not easy. I think I stammered my way through the first 15 minutes. But after that, we sat for 4 hours, and the time just flew.
And even in those first few minutes, when you're just meeting him, he looks at you and he says, "Diane, you're more attractive in person than you are even on TV."
Well, you haven't said anything about that yet, Steve.
You're very attractive.
Thank you, Steve.
You look terrific, Diane. Yeah. But Cary...
I didn't have to ask him.
Well, he had different interests. I mean, I have some dignity here, Diane. You know? Yeah. We're just rolling here, aren't we? Yeah, yeah. But how do you recover from Cary Grant looking you in the eye and say you're even more attractive in person than you are on TV?
You don't. You don't ever recover from that. You just don't.
You just keep going.
You just don't.
Yeah. What was the downside to going out with a man like Cary Grant? The most famous man, one of the most famous men in the world, maybe the most attractive. What was the downside?
There wasn't any. There wasn't any downside. That only happened after we got married. But there really wasn't. It was fun. It was an adventure for me. I'd have to go into a restaurant and see if it was crowded, if there was a bar that he had to walk past. And you have to understand, there wasn't the paparazzi then that there are now. We didn't have to deal with that like Lady Di did and all those people. It wasn't as it wasn't allowed. I mean, it just wasn't allowed.
But you were Hollywood's golden couple. I mean, what's that? That's got to be a pretty heady experience walking down the street with Cary Grant.
Well, it was, you know, always the best table in the restaurant. It was private planes. It was pretty special.
How did you keep that from going to your head?
You know, I don't know, Steve.
Or did it?
No, it didn't. I mean, we met with, you know, Prince Philip and Princess Margaret. We met with royalty. We met with the elite, the high. I mean, I met all the stars of that day. But he, in a very simple way, was grounded to a certain extent. He kept it simple. And so for me, it was simple. Made me feel anything but welcome, and neither did the people that I met. They treated me as with love and respect, and it wasn't heady. I don't know how to explain that. It was just nice.
Yeah, you know, at that point he had been married several times. I think three right?
Times.
Was there an alarm bell going off in your head, thinking,
yes,
man. Ouch, three
absolutely
times.
I think that's why I didn't date him for many, many months. And my parents were not happy about the thought of my dating him, and I respect them and their advice, and I'm very close to them, and so I just didn't. But he didn't give up, and you know, it wasn't a game with me. A lot of women will do that to seduce their guys into asking more because it's a game. I really wasn't playing a game, and he got that. I really wasn't playing a game. I just thought it best not to go there. I lied about working. He'd call. He'd say, do you want to go out? I'd say, yeah. I'm busy. And it wasn't the truth. And my agent, who I was living with, said, why are you sitting home watching TV with me?
Yeah.
When you And his girlfriend said, give him my number. You don't want to go? But I just, well, I caved.
He was older than your father.
He was older than my dad, yeah. For a lot of reasons, you know.
It must have been strange for your dad.
Yes, it was. It was.
Scary, even.
Yeah, it was. It was.
What did he say about that as the years went by?
Well, as the years went by, many things transgressed. There were a lot of happenings that kind of proved him right. But in the beginning, you know, my daddy was my hero. And if you look at the photos in my book, there is a photo that most people think is Cary, and it's a picture of my father. And yes, people, you know, I had no conscious thought about marrying Daddy, but my father was the greatest man I ever knew, and we had a connection that was indescribable. And
from the state of Washington.
From the state of Washington. My dad was from Canada, but I lived in Seattle at the time. Right?
Real people.
Yeah, down to earth, real. Principled.
Yeah.
Principled. That's the main word I can think about my dad. Yeah. Never heard him say an unkind word about anyone. And everyone loved him and respected him. In his passing, he was still driving me, picking me up from the airport at 99 years of age. An extraordinary man.
Wow. Wow.
And at his passing, the church was overflowing. They couldn't pack the people in that he'd helped, that he'd mentored, that he'd encouraged. He was special.
We're visiting with actress Diane Cannon. You know, Diane, I'm holding your book that came out a couple of years ago, My Life with Cary Grant, Dear Cary, it's titled. And there's a black and white photograph on the cover of this book, you know, Cary and you sort of cheek to cheek there. And obviously, he's very, very handsome. And you're just so young. 33-year gap between the two of you.
Yes.
That's a lot of years.
That's a lot of years.
Was it an issue?
I think it was after a while. Mm-hmm. I think it was after a while. I think I wanted to go out and do more. He really liked to stay home and watch TV at night.
Sure.
And I get that. I get that now.
So do I, by the way.
But I didn't get that then, you know, and that was an issue. But we both liked sports, and we both were seekers, and we found enough to keep us on solid, loving ground for a long time.
Yeah. I love this quote from you. You've already alluded to this. You once said this, Diane, about Cary Grant: if you think he exuded charm on the screen, being with him, it was times it by a billion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, what's the one thing he did that you just loved?
Well.
Are you going to make me blush here? I'm on the radio. We're just talking here, aren't we?
He did a lot of things that I liked.
Yeah.
I thought you were into the political arena.
Well,
why don't you practice that this morning?
We need to go
Steve.
Back there, don't we? Yeah, I'm stumbling here through this thing. You know, but you know, it didn't last, all this great vibe. It wasn't long after you married him that he became very controlling. You know, he wanted to control the way you looked. And I'm wondering why, because
you know what?
Pretty dang good.
I don't really want to talk about that, Steve, if you don't mind. You know what? Let people buy the book, because it's all in there.
Yeah.
And it's a New York Times bestseller. And I have to tell you that the second year it was out, it was on the New York Times bestseller list for 5 consecutive weeks on the e-books. And my publisher said that that's not a common thing. And the reason I think, first of all, I want you to understand, Steve, this is not a bashing Cary Grant book.
It's not. No, it's not.
The reason I wrote this book and the reason I waited all those years to write it,
I was going
to
ask,
is because everyone has had a broken heart, and I had a broken heart, and my heart's not broken anymore. And how I healed it, and how our hearts get broken, and how we go into relationships with everything being so wonderful, and how that kind of falls apart, and how you mend that is what this book is about. And I think that's why people are alluding to it and why people are identifying with it.
Let's walk down that road just for a moment. Your heart was broken when the marriage ended, you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you've gone through, again, this is not a bashing Cary book, but you've been through some fairly heavy stuff.
Right.
Including something called LSD.
Right.
Why?
I really don't want to talk about that now. I really don't.
Okay.
Let me say in short, Steve.
Just give me a little bit.
That I wanted to make him happy.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I wanted more than anything else in the world. And what I've learned is that one of the great lessons of the book is this: if you go against your own spirit and your own soul to make someone happy, it's the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of that relationship. I don't care whether it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband or a wife. I don't care what it is. Cary had experimented very successfully with LSD. He wasn't using it as a drug high. He thought it was a highway, a gateway to God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to use it because he thought it would make me a better woman.
Hmm.
I wasn't quite sure how he thought that would be, but he did. So I did it, and it had a bad effect on me. I couldn't deal with it.
It took you how long to move on?
Many years.
To mend the broken heart?
Many years.
How many?
Many years. many years. I can't count, but a long time to sort it out. But I have to tell you this. It was a blessing in my life. That marriage was nothing but a blessing in my life, and everything I went through. Have you read the book?
Yeah, big chunks of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a blessing. It didn't sink me. I rose like the cream higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enabled me to help people. It's enabled me to mentor people. It's enabled me to live a better life. I consider myself a really happy woman. I have a good time. I love my life. I am surrounded by wonderful friends. I'm still single, available.
Talk to me.
This is not a paid advertisement.
Well, this is just you and me talking here. Just you and me talking. Yeah. Well, you do have a good time.
I do.
Everything I sort of see and read about you, you know, in the magazines and stuff, you're always having a good time. You're at Lakers games. You're having fun. You're on your feet. You're cheering. You're just, you're living.
I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Sounds like fun.
I have a great life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does the Lakers thing come from? Because I associate Diane Cannon more and more with the L.A. Lakers.
Yeah, my dad.
For years.
My dad, as a kid, would take me as an infant on his back to all the games, hockey, baseball, football, basketball. But basketball, I loved basketball.
Why basketball?
I don't know. I think close up.
And you're always very close up. You had those courtside seats. I'm always thinking, one time in my life, I want to sit courtside and watch the. I would have loved to watch Magic and the Lakers back in those days, but to sit courtside anywhere in an NBA game, what a thrill that must be.
Do you know where I sit, Steve?
Where?
Next to Magic.
I have the best seat
at Staples.
Ah.
And he has taught me so much about the game.
Oh, I bet he has.
When they're running the court, he'll go, and I'll say, explain that to me. He'll say, what do you mean by that? And he'll teach me the intricacies of the game that I never would have known about.
You know, you talk about Magic Johnson, and I have this memory of him. So many people do have memories of him. I'm a sophomore at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and his Michigan State team came to play the Badgers. And this was when he was a freshman, and the world was on fire with Magic Johnson. Who was this kid? And he and Greg Kelzer, the forward for that team, they came into Madison and played a game, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen on the court, the no-look passes. And we'd never seen that at that point, at least in my lifetime. Bob Cousy may have done some of that stuff back in the day. I will never forget it. It was magic, to make the point, use the word. It was just amazing. And you watched him all those years on the court.
Yes, I did.
What a thrill.
Now I sit next to him on the court.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the day he had to say that he was leaving the game. Mm. That was
for the AIDS thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a day, wasn't it?
I was filming and I was in line getting some food. And I remember having to go to my trailer and not being able to come out for a couple hours. They had to hold up filming because I couldn't. It was too much. But thank God, he and Cookie, his wife.
Yeah.
And his kids I've known since they were babies. In fact, in one of his photographs to me where he's jumping up and down, he inscribes me as Irvin's godmother. he's really... he's an amazing human being.
I have no doubt.
And now you know what he's doing with the Dodgers.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I asked him what he's going to do with all his money. He just laughs.
Yeah.
He's so smart.
But what a success story, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's kept the family together, and he's done some very great stuff in the inner city in L.A. and elsewhere, and it's an amazing story.
So is his wife, Cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing people.
What else do you do for fun these days? And what keeps Diane Cannon going?
Well, I have a group called Get Your Love On, LUV. I hold meetings on the CBS lot every other Saturday night. They're going to be rehearsing while I'm here in Kansas.
Hmm.
And we just talk about how to keep our hearts open and relationships. And I have a great band and singers that smoke the house.
Wow.
And we encourage kids in their careers. We do a lot of things. That's a full-time job.
You're helping people.
Yeah.
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 You know, I wanted to ask you, you're coming out to the new theater to do some stuff here. And I'm just wondering, you know, why?
I know.
Why are you here? It's an extended engagement. It's a huge commitment. Why are you here?
I know.
Yeah.
So many people ask me that.
Yeah.
Well,
Overland Park, Kansas. Here we are. Here you come. Yeah.
I'm glad
you're here.
You know, I'm a very spiritual gal.
Mm-hmm.
And when they first asked me, I said no, because they asked me to come during Lakers season. I said, absolutely not.
No way. But your team's not doing so well these days.
Hey, we're okay.
You're not okay.
No, we are. We've got a whole new bench now. We're going to be all right. I'm still ticked at David Stern. for what he did with us with Chris Paul. Are you aware of that?
I am. You all were going to take Chris Paul last year.
We had him. Not going to take him. We had a deal, a signed deal.
Nixed the deal. He said, for some reason, you can't do that.
You can't do that. And he gave him to the Clippers.
To the cross-town rival.
But how can a commissioner who's also a basketball team owner do that?
Well, you wonder.
A lot
of people weren't happy with that
call.
No,
a lot of people. And I think if Jerry Buss had been feeling better, he was still alive then.
Yeah.
I think if Jerry had been feeling better, he would have taken care of business. But
yeah. Okay, but you're out here for the new theater. You're doing The Fox on the Fairway. It opens on August 29th.
And I love the theater. That's why. I love the theater.
Even now.
Love it.
Why?
Because the immediacy. Contact with the audience.
You get that juice from them.
Right now, the laughter. You know, I love to make people laugh.
And that still matters.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I'll do it as long as I'm living.
But the new theater, the run at new theater restaurants, it's kind of a daily, sometimes twice a day, I think. Right, Rob?
Eight shows a week. Two on Saturday, two on Sunday?
Two on Sunday, two on Wednesday.
Two on Wednesday, I think he said. Yeah, so that's...
I got to change that for me.
You're working. Yeah. You didn't realize that until this moment. Yeah, I'm glad we clarified that for you. Yeah.
I thought it was two on Saturday, two on Sunday. That's better.
Yeah.
I got a lot of energy, and I love
Seems
it.
Seems like
it. I love to work.
Yeah.
I love it. What else are you going to do?
Yeah. Overland Park, Kansas, here you come.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited about being here.
Oh, that's great.
And I have a lot of friends coming to visit who have never been to Kansas.
Yeah.
So I'm going to help your trade business, your tourist business here.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Before we take a break, Diane, I want to play a scene from a very popular TV show in which you are helping another actor build her confidence to take the stage.
Piggy, this is the theater, and you are a star. Now, you must go on, Piggy. I mean, the whole world expects it of you, don't they? Your loyal fans expect it of you, Piggy. Your frog expects it of you. Yes. Yes. You must look away from the tragedy. You must fight back the tears, and you must look to the footlights. Yes, Piggy. Yes, this is your legend, and this is your life.
Yes, Diane.
Yes.
Hand me my wrap.
Yes, your wrap.
I shall go on as a superstar.
Yes. Yes.
Listen, you guys took so long, so we had to cancel the number.
Cancel the number?
Piggy, wait a second. I can explain it.
It took you a second to recognize that, didn't it, from the Muppets?
Oh, it did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard that in years.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's run through some of the great stars you've worked with over the years. Talk about them. Talk about some of your other charitable causes and some more stuff from the new theater restaurant, okay?
You bet.
Okay. Diane Cannon's our guest. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate at kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking with Diane Cannon. She's an Oscar winner, a Golden Globe winner. She was Oscar nominated for the 1969 film Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, in 1978's Heaven Can Wait. She's appearing at the New Theater Restaurant, the production of The Fox on the Fairway. It runs from August 29th to November 3rd. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address again, UpToDate at kcur.org. And Diane, you brought some friends with you today, Matilda and JC. Who are those folks?
Matilda is a 5-pound chihuahua. JC, whose name is Juanita Sita Carmelita Loma Linda Tralala Cohen.
Yes.
Is a 4-pound chihuahua.
Okay.
Yes.
And they travel with you?
They travel with me.
Even on the plane?
It
just works. Eh?
It just works.
They see Diane Cannon come and they think, okay, you can bring whatever you want on the plane, right? Yeah.
No.
German Shepherds or anything else, too, right? Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Steve from Lee Summit. Steve, you're on Up to Date with Diane Cannon. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. What an honor to talk to you.
Yes, it is.
I turned on a episode of the Bad Masterson.
Oh my gosh!
And I didn't recognize you at first, and then who is that gorgeous-looking chick? And then I saw the credits, and I just wanted to ask, how's your daughter? What's she doing? What was it like to date Johnny Carson? And maybe any funny stories of early career? Where'd you get started in your early career? And what was your favorite role? Whatever you can talk about.
Okay, I'm making a list here. Lots of good things there, Steve. Thank you. How about your daughter, Jennifer, who's an actress in her own right, I believe?
Oh, she is indeed. Yeah. She's doing just great. Just talked to her earlier this morning. She lives in Los Angeles and has two children, so I'm a grandmother of two, but they don't call me grandmother. That's not allowed. They call me Go-Go, and because I do go.
Mm-hmm, yes, you do.
Go-Go-Goes. She's very happy and the joy of my life, as are the children. Bette Masterson, oh, my gosh, does that bring back memories? That was a few minutes ago.
You did Gunsmoke and
all those
shows.
Yeah,
you know, you look at the arc of your career, and you were talking about how much you enjoy acting and coming out here to the new theater. You've always worked. I mean, there's very few gaps in your career as you sort of move through the years. You clearly like to work.
Yes, yes. The only time I didn't work was when I was married.
Yeah,
but all the other time I've worked, I love to work. I love it. Love people. Love working with people. Love meeting people. Love making people laugh or move them, whatever it is.
Our caller, Steve, also asked about you dating Johnny Carson. I'd forgotten about that.
He was a great, great, great friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about getting really serious at one point and both decided that it was better to just remain friends.
Everyone said he was a tough guy to get to know, to sort of move past the outside stuff. Is that the case or maybe not for you?
No, Johnny and I had a tremendous connection. He was very private.
Yes.
A very private guy. But I used to open him up. I used to have parties at my house on the beach where he'd play the drums. I don't know if you knew that about him.
Yeah, sure he did.
A great drummer. And Dudley Moore would be on the piano.
Oh,
and I'd pop him popcorn, and he was a happy puppy. Between his drumming and his popcorn, that's all he needed. And he would have restaurants shut down so that the two of us could go, because if we went to a restaurant together, very much like Carrie, people would bother him. And he wanted intimacy, so he'd have the restaurant shut down, and we'd go have dinner and talk for 5-6 hours. He was a great friend. When I went through my divorce, he was the first person that took me to dinner. He was just a great, great friend. They called me, Larry called me, Larry King, when Johnny passed, to go talk about him. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
You know, I still miss him.
Yeah, I do
too.
Late.
I really like Letterman a lot. I think he's terrific. But boy, I miss Johnny Carson.
There's nobody like him.
I mean, he just was the king. And Letterman would say as much if he was sitting with us today. Right?
And Leno, nobody's the same as Johnny.
Yeah.
Nobody. And he loved people. He really loved them. But he just had that timing.
Yes. Yes.
That timing that was just, and he had a huge heart. A huge heart. I actually knew both his wives, the last two. But a great friend.
You know, once in a while, I still come across that clip of, I think it was the second to last show, if I'm not mistaken, and I might be, of Bette Midler singing One for My Baby, to him on the set, and Johnny just sitting in his chair, and he clearly was moved by it, had a tear in his eye, and You just don't have moments like that very often.
No, you're so right, Steve. You nailed it. That was a special, special moment.
Just extraordinary.
You know, it just comes to thought, although it wasn't one of Steve's questions, the caller, but it was one of yours. Why here in Overland? So much of what I'm offered in Los Angeles has so much violence connected with it. The last script that I read, literally at 2 o'clock in the morning, started out great, started out fantastic. My sister has passed away. I'm raising her 17-year-old daughter. I love the idea of mentoring. I love the way it was written. And then I got to a scene at about midway where three kids are in bed and one boy takes a knife and slits the throat. I literally took the script and threw it across the room.
Yeah.
And said to one of my agents, I've asked you not to send me violence. Well, that script's not violent because that's become now, that stuff is not considered violent. It's crazy.
You know, I'm getting to a point where I can't, my kids give me a hard time. I can't watch that stuff much anymore. You know, I had a turning point in my life. The turning point for me was early 90s, I want to say 91, 92, Jodie Foster in The Accused. And she is assaulted atop a pinball machine. And I, you know, after a hard week of work, I thought, what am I paying money to? I just can't do that anymore. I just, and at home, I get up and walk out sometimes. The kids are all, you're, you know, I can't do it.
I can't
go there anymore.
And I understand people that like it. I understand, you know,
I'm
not judging it.
Yeah,
I'm just
saying,
for me,
yeah,
I can't lend myself to that. So come to Overland and help people laugh. I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
In quality writing, brilliant writing,
yeah.
A farce. It's brilliant.
Again, the name of the show, The Fox on the Fairway. Tony from Lawrence. Tony, you're on Up to Date. Diane Cannon's our guest. Good morning.
Hi, Diane. It's wonderful to talk to you. You're in several of my favorite movies, and one of them is The Last of Sheila.
Right.
And I wondered if it was fun working on that movie.
Oh, I had such a good time. What was that last? I just saw that. Oh, they just ran that in Los Angeles. They're making it a classic. Thousands of people came. It was quite a night. And I watched it. I hadn't seen that movie since I made it.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, it's got such an incredible cast and some of the actors that became some of my favorites, like James Mason and, you know, James Coburn. And I just wondered what it was like to work on it.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was such an amazing opportunity. I'll tell you why. One of the reasons, because we started filming that movie on Saul Siegel's yacht. And the sea, which they hadn't counted on, became frenzied. There were storms. And they had to build a set. So we had to spend a month in the south of France while they built that set, just lying in the sun, having tacos, burritos, croissant. But then when we got to work, it was tremendous because, as you say, there were brilliant actors. And Tony Perkins, who was another dear friend, was, along with Stephen Sondheim, who was a great musical writer, collaborated on that.
I was going to say, Steve Walker, one of our film critics, has written in just to point that out, that Anthony Perkins and Stephen Sondheim were involved. Were the writers around the set a lot, Steve Walker wants to know?
Yes, they were there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were there all the time, helping little changes here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliantly written, brilliantly directed. You know, some really first-class actors. I had to gain 30 pounds for that movie. I was playing my agent, Sue Mengers, who they're now doing a Broadway show about. I think Bette's playing the part.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was a round, healthy lass.
You know, speaking of brilliant direction, tell us a little bit about your 76 film, Number One, which was about adolescent sexual curiosity. It won the Oscar. You were the writer, director, producer, and film editor for that production. How important was that film to your career?
I don't know.
Because it took you into a different place, didn't it?
And I must say, gratefully, that I was offered many films to direct after that, but they weren't up my alley. They weren't things I wanted. There was one that Michael Eisner, who was president of
Disney
at that time, mm-hmm. offered me. They wanted me, he and Mike Ovitz wanted me to come and direct a movie. And I said, okay, but I need a month to prepare. They wanted me to take over for another director who they weren't having a happy collaboration with. And I said, okay, but I need a few weeks. They said, no, you got to step in right now. I said, no, but there needs to be rewrite. So turned that down, and then I turned four or five other things down. And then they gave me an office at Fox, big office. They wanted me to direct another thing, and I just wasn't right.
You know, at the time, you win the Oscar for Number One, the film. You told People Magazine, Diane, at the time about this film, Mama's come a long, long way. At last, I've got something to show people that says me. And you also said this: I couldn't play one more broad who was good for a laugh and a lay. My career never made me happy. I suffered from this awful emotional pain and tried everything from drugs and encounter groups to Freudian and primal therapies to make it go away. After years of literally and figuratively pounding my head against walls, I said enough.
Yeah.
That's where you were then.
That's where I was.
Yeah.
I have found it frustrating, to say the least, about the way that they, for the most part, cast women in films. She's either the whore with a heart of gold, or she's the mother, or she's the librarian, but she's never all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a full-bodied woman.
Is that still the case?
For the most part. For the most part.
That's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, it is.
It's 2013.
Yeah. So I turned down so many roles. And it's scary, Steve, because mm-hmm. you start turning down invitations, and pretty soon the invitations stop coming.
Yeah. Politically tricky.
It is. It is tricky. So you have to, as a woman in Hollywood, have to constantly keep finding ways to reinvent yourself, which is the book, you know.
Yeah. Let's move on to a couple of other big scenes, big roles you had. I want to talk about Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice a bit. This is a film about swinging. What was it like playing the part of Alice in such a controversial film when it was released? And again, you were nominated for an Oscar for this one.
Okay. It was I was doing theater in Chicago when my agent called me, and they called me back to Los Angeles. And he said, you've got two offers. One is a 5-picture deal at Universal. And the other is a screen test for this movie called Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice, which I read and said, oh, ho, ho, that's a movie. That's a part. That's a part. Well, I just felt that it was such an amazing part. She was the innocent one. She was the one that didn't want to do anything, that finally says, okay, I'll go along with the crowd.
Yeah.
So I turned down a 5-picture deal at Universal, which my agent said was stupidity.
I was going to say.
And tested for Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice. And as you say, wound up getting an Oscar nomination for it.
Let's play a scene from this film, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, in which you're talking with a therapist about how your friend's obsession with sex is affecting your family.
I am a very happy person most of the time.
What makes you a happy person?
What do you mean, what makes me a happy person? I mean, I like my husband, and I love my child, and I love going places, and I love our friends, and I love my friends. I still love them. I mean, I love them very much. It's just that they're just, well, that's all that's on their minds is sex. Sex, 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 and sex, if it's on your mind all the time, it can't be a very good thing, can it? I mean, shouldn't it just happen? It used to just happen.
Are you aware that earlier you said that you like your husband and you love your child?
No, I don't remember saying that. No, I don't. I mean, I love my husband.
You do love him?
Of course I love him. Did I say that?
That's great stuff. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Bring back memories?
Yeah, it sure does.
Let's move on to Heaven Can Wait, which came a few years later. You won a Golden Globe for that role, and you worked with another legendary ladies' man, Warren Beatty. How did Warren Beatty compare with Cary Grant? can I ask? I had to go there.
Well, I was married to Cary. I was never married to Warren.
Well, I know that. I'm just...
Warren is an amazing man. An amazing man. And a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And a brilliant director. Brilliant. Not always easy to work with because he is so detailed.
Mm.
He's the most detailed director I've ever worked with. But brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Let's listen to a little bit from Heaven Can Wait. This is Diane Cannon with actor Charles Grodin.
You locked me in a closet.
Only for a moment.
What did you say to him?
I told him you saw a mouse.
Oh, my God.
But, darling, look, I'm not very good at spur-of-the-moment alibis. I'm very calm. Oh. I'm not very good.
What's the difference? He knows anyway. He's probably got enough evidence to lock us away for the rest of our lives.
Darling, I don't understand this. I saw him inhale the nose spray. 2 full squirts in each nostril.
He never really inhaled it, did he? He overheard it somehow. That must have been what had happened. I mean... Maybe he's got us bugged right now. Maybe everything is recorded.
No, no, darling. We're not being recorded. An electronics expert sweeps the place every day. He's afraid of being bugged too, darling.
He's playing with us. That's what it is. This is a game. Oh, my God, he's playing a game with us. That's what it is. You locked me in a closet. What?
Hello. Mr. Farnsworth would like to see you now.
Yes, indeed.
That's tough to do a scene. It sounds like so much going on. Yeah. You must have rehearsed the heck out of that.
Actually, no. But what I had to do was stay in a state of frenzy. That was a really tough scene. Gosh, Steve, you understand acting. Because that was a tough scene.
It sounds like a tough scene.
I had to stay in a state of frenzy for about 3 hours. And finally I said, Warren, I don't have any more. The well is dry. I had to stay pitched because you can't act that. You can't blah, 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 because then it sounds tinny. You have to be it. So I had to be in a state of frenzy for a few hours.
And how do you do that as an actress?
You work yourself up into it. That's called technique.
Yeah, right.
And that was a tough scene.
I couldn't do that. I don't think I could do that for 3 hours.
Well, I prefer not to myself.
As a matter of fact.
But that's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Diane Cannon's our guest. She's won an Oscar. She's won a Golden Globe. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org. You'll see her at the New Theater Restaurant, the production of The Fox on Their Fairway, opening on August 29th. Again, 816-235-2888. I want to go, John writes this about Heaven Can Wait. I remember Diane in Heaven Can Wait, he writes, a brilliant performance as the emotionally rattled wife trying to come off as calm and secure in so many scenes. So funny and memorable. It's amazing how Diane played the duality so well. It must have been fun and challenging to do that role, which is just what you said, and John clearly remembers you in that role.
Well,
yeah,
that's nice.
It's neat, yeah. Let's go to Brian from Overland Park. Brian, good morning. You're on Up to Date with Diane Cannon.
Well, thanks a lot. First of all, Diane, I want to say I read your book about a year ago. And I've read a lot of books on Hollywood, and yours is right up there with Frank Capra's name above the title. It is a great book, well written. And there was one part in there that I laughed out loud, and it was, I believe it was Cary Grant's Malibu house, and he got stung by some fish. And I believe it was the maid that said, you know, there's only one cure for this, and that's... Would you mind telling that story?
Because take it from there, so Diane. I think I know where this is going because it's a great story, by the
way. Well, actually,
I don't know if you can get through without laughing, but go ahead.
Do you really want me to?
Oh, it's a good story.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
This
well,
is public radio. We got adult.
This is. Weren't in Malibu, my friend. We were in Jamaica. Cary was filming, and he had a day off. And he was yearning to take a swim. So I sat on the beach and waited for him while he took a little wade into the water. And when he got about chest deep, he started to scream and yell. And I thought he was calling me into the water with him, but he wasn't. He was screaming. He only came running toward the shore. I started to walk in the water. He said, don't come in, don't come in. He said, something's happened to me. And I looked down at his leg when he got on the sand, and there were like a thousand little black splinters exploding in his leg. I didn't know what it was, and he was screaming. I mean, he didn't stop. It was nonstop. We ran into the house, and the maid said, oh, that sea urchin. Oh, that sea urchin. He said, I don't care. Get an axe. Cut my leg off. I don't want to be here. Cut my leg off. And she said, oh, no, Mom. You know, Mom, only one thing helped that thing, Mom. I said, what's that? You got to pee on leg. I said, pee? Urine. Kill it, Mom. I said, I can't do that. She said, Carrie's yelling, I don't care who does it. Somebody do it. Get me help.
Oh, and you did.
And I did.
You helped him out. Good for you. That's the end of the story, right?
He said, that's the only time I think I would ever thank anyone for taking it on my leg.
Oh, boy. All right.
God love him. That's painful stuff.
Yeah.
Not the second thing, the first thing.
Let's run through some of the people you've worked with over the years, because so many interesting people, and I wanted you to give me a quick take on some of them. Willie Nelson, you appeared with him in Honeysuckle Rose.
Yeah, just warm, fuzzy.
Yeah, I bet. Burt Reynolds. You co-starred with him in Seamus.
Oh, Burt was cheeky and feisty and bold.
Fun?
Oh, yeah. Great fun.
Good bold or bad bold?
Oh, good bold.
Yeah.
Bold is good. Bold means you're not afraid to say what you think.
Yeah. Chevy Chase and John Belushi.
Oh,
you
God.
Hosted Saturday Night Live in its first season back in 1976.
First season.
You must have seen some cool stuff. That must have been fascinating.
You did your homework.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. I had a fantasy all my life, even as a grown woman, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That a Prince Charming would come up out of the ocean, a guy on a white horse. He would gallop along the sand, see me, and put me on back of him on the horse. We would gallop off and live happily ever after. So when you come on to Saturday Night Live, first thing they say is, what is your fantasy? So I told him my fantasy. Completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
At the end of the show.
Right.
Out comes Chevy Chase, stark naked from the waist up, soaking wet on an old broken down white horse.
Wow.
Picks me up, puts me on in back of him. As the horse walks off the stage, it poops.
Why
so
not?
Much for dreams. And fantasies.
But the creative spark energy on that show must have been extraordinary.
Oh my
Just
God.
What an amazing moment in time to be there.
Belushi was. I recently saw something. Somebody sent me a clip from that where I'm sitting in a bathtub as a star, and they're selling used bathwater. Stars use bathwater.
Sounds like something he'd do. Yeah. How about Al Pacino? You were with him in Death Trap.
I taught him. I sang opera with him. Al and I would the thing would break, and we'd go. We'd both sing opera. We had such a good time together. I made Al laugh.
He strikes me as so intense.
And so to relax him, I would say, come on, let's sing opera, Al. And he would
sing
loosen
opera
up
with
and we would do our duets. Yeah.
How about Christopher Reeve from Caddyshack 2?
Oh, God. I think Christopher Reeve was not Caddyshack 2. I think it was the New York thing with Michael Caine. Death Trap.
Oh, Death Trap. You might be right.
I think that's what it was, but oh my God, talk about it. I walked onto the stage to rehearse that movie because our director, Sidney Lumet, was always, but you did your homework. You got it all right, my friend. Sidney Lumet was an amazing director. I worked for him a couple times, and he always rehearsed his movies, which is why he brought them in always ahead of schedule. And we'd run the whole thing like a play. And I walked to the first day, and I knew Michael. It was wonderful to see him. But Christopher Reeves was, talk about a presence and an amazing talent and an amazing friend. What a waste. What a shame to lose him so early.
And then Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon from Out to Sea from 1997.
Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon. Two of the genius comics of any decade.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. One day we're sitting, I'm talking to Walter, and I said, Walter, what are we going to do in this next scene? He said, I haven't read this piece of shit. He used to go to the racetrack on the weekends. And I mean bet, big time.
Yeah.
Big time heavy. I mean big time. So he worked to pay off all he had to do was just move his head. I remember I hosted a luncheon at the Beverly Hills Hotel honoring his family. And at the end, he stood up and he said, why would anybody honor our family? We're the most dysfunctional family in Beverly Hills. He was so honest.
Yeah.
There was not one ounce of caca there.
Hard to keep up with a couple guys like that?
Honestly. They made it easy to keep up. You know, they were just so real and so down to earth and so, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, Diane Cannon, again, she appears in The Fox on the Fairway at the New Theater Restaurant. It runs from August 29th to November 3rd. And, Diane, we've done a lot of interviews in here, and I have enjoyed this one as much as anyone we've done. What a pleasure. What a great time.
Steve, thank you so much.
Such a thrill to have you here.
I've enjoyed it, too. Thank you so much.
Enjoy Overland Park. Enjoy Kansas City.
Thanks for all your homework.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure. Yeah. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. And to get tickets at the New Theater Restaurant, call 913-649-7469, 913-649-7469. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Sangeeta Shastri. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.